Hello, and welcome to Ukraine Calling, your weekly review of what's been happening in Ukraine with a focus on a main issue. I'm Marta Dychok for Hromadske Radio in Kyiv, and here's a look at some of the stories that were in the news this week.
Reform is absolutely vital if Ukraine is to realize her potential.
Good morning, everybody. Well, welcome to London. We've come together with one aim, which is to build a prosperous and a peaceful and successful Ukraine.
Вельмишановні друзі, колеги, мені було надзвичайно цікаво почути ваш погляд на те, що відбувається в Україні, як відбувається прогрес.
За минулу добу внаслідок бойових дій один український військовослужбовець загинув, 9 дістали поранення і травми.
America loves Poland, and America loves the Polish people. Thank you.
Britain and Ukraine jointly hosted a major international conference in London, England, on reform in Ukraine on Thursday, July the 6th. Ahead of the conference, British Ambassador to Ukraine, Judith Gow, explained what the conference was about.
We've come together with one aim, which is to build a prosperous and a peaceful and successful Ukraine.
Boris Johnson, the British Foreign Secretary, opened the conference and invited Ukrainian Prime Minister Volodymyr Groysman to deliver the keynote address. There were also a few positive international media reports this week on how Ukraine's economy has turned a corner in the Financial Times and how positive change is happening in Ukraine in the Wall Street Journal. Later in the show, we'll bring you a feature interview with one of Ukraine's leading reformers, Dr. Ulyana Suprun, the acting health minister. A number of other international events happened this week that are important for Ukraine. U.S. President Donald Trump visited Poland ahead of going to the Friday-Saturday G20 summit in Hamburg, Germany. This is Trump's second overseas trip, and he allowed his wife Melania to introduce him to the crowd in Warsaw.
And now it is my honor to introduce to you my husband, the President of the United States, Donald J. Trump.
We've come to your nation to deliver a very important message. America loves Poland, and America loves the Polish people. Thank you.
Ukraine is only one of many items on this G20 summit agenda. The leaders of the world's most powerful economies will be looking at the issue of leadership, how the concept of the West is under attack, climate change, North Korea, the international migration crisis, discord in the Gulf, and more. No agreement is expected on Ukraine. But according to Ukraine's President Poroshenko, German Chancellor Angela Merkel assured him in a phone call that nothing would be decided about Ukraine without Ukraine. Many eyes will be focused on the meeting between Trump and Russia's President Putin in Hamburg on Friday. A series of posters appeared on the streets of Hamburg ahead of the G20 summit. They display photo portraits of Ukrainian soldiers, volunteers, medics, and others who've been fighting in various ways in the war zone. The caption reads, "Look closely at their faces." This project was launched by the Ukraine Crisis Media Center last autumn. Details about each person depicted in the photos are available on a clickable website, herofaces.org. We'll post a link to it on our website. In eastern Ukraine, the war continues. Although the intensity of the shelling decreased, 5 Ukrainian soldiers were killed and 19 wounded in the past week. Meanwhile, back in Kyiv, the Obolonsky District Court resumed proceedings against former President Viktor Yanukovych on July the 6th. The fugitive president is charged with high treason, violating the territorial integrity and sovereignty of Ukraine, and waging war or aggressive military actions. Yanukovych has denied all charges, called the case a sham, remains in Russia, and refuses to appear before the Ukrainian court. The court received permission to proceed with an absentee trial. This Thursday session lasted less than an hour. Yanukovych's lawyers, Vitaly Serdyuk and Igor Fedorenko, announced that they had been fired and therefore they were withdrawing. The court had to postpone proceedings and might now provide Yanukovych with lawyers from the Center for Free Legal Assistance. Our guest today is Dr. Ulyana Suprun, who is Ukraine's acting health minister. And she is spearheading a package of reforms that I believe will be voted on in Parliament this week. So thank you very much for finding the time to speak to us during this busy time. But something that our listeners may know that we've been reporting on health-related issues on our program, but something you may not know is this minister is actually U.S.-born. She's a medical doctor from the United States, born in Detroit, and she'll tell us where she was practicing and also professor of pathology. But now she's in Ukraine, so I'd like to start by asking you, what brought you to Ukraine? What made you stay? And how did you become acting health minister?
Thank you for the invitation to come and speak to you and your audience. I practiced medicine in the United States for about 15 years before I moved to Ukraine. I was born in Detroit, as you said, from Ukrainian parents. They left. They were forced to leave Ukraine after World War II with their parents. They spent half of their lives in the United States, and I was born in Detroit. However, as I was growing up, I went to Ukrainian schools, Ukrainian church. I belonged to Ukrainian youth associations, and I really felt very close to my Ukrainian background. Back in 2013, my husband and I decided to move to Ukraine on a permanent basis. We had been always planning on moving to Ukraine, but something would get in the way. We would have school to finish, jobs, parents were ill. And finally, in 2013, we decided to put all our stuff in storage and to move to Ukraine on a permanent basis. The two of us arrived in Ukraine on November 29th, which was the day that the students were beat up on the Maidan. And after that, we took part in the Revolution of Dignity. Then when the war started, we started helping the military with humanitarian aid and with teaching tactical medicine. That's battlefield first aid, teaching combat medics, providing them with first aid kits and medical equipment, and then eventually starting to teach physicians, the doctors, on how to perform surgery and how to help those who had been involved in both battlefield and non-battlefield trauma. After about a year and a half of being in Ukraine, the president awarded myself and my husband Ukrainian citizenship in the interest of the nation. And a year later, I was asked by the prime minister to become the first deputy minister and acting minister of health of Ukraine. So we've had a long road getting us to where we are. But one of the things that's very important about being here at this time is really Ukrainian independence didn't begin in 1991 when there was a referendum and when there was a declaration of independence in Ukraine. But really, Ukraine became most independent and chose its path in a direction of the West, of civilization, and of Europe after the Revolution of Dignity. And in the last 3 years, there's been quite a few changes that have occurred in Ukraine. We have chosen our path. We have chosen that we want to go into the civilized Western world. And I believe that part of this is also changing the medicine, changing the healthcare system in Ukraine, which is a leftover of the Soviet system. Ukraine is one of the few countries that has still the Semashko system of medicine, which is a way of financing the actual infrastructure of medicine and the existence of hospitals and the number of hospital beds, but it doesn't pay for the services provided in those hospitals or in the medical facilities. So one of the big changes, one of the transformations that's happening in Ukrainian medicine now with the reform package is that we're changing the way that we're financing medicine. We are going to a national health insurance where we will be paying for services rather than the existence of a hospital, paying for actual operations rather than walls.
That is quite revolutionary reforms, and that was actually what I wanted to hear a little bit more about. You've been acting minister for less than a year, almost a year, and in that year, you have introduced a number of really radical changes to the way, as you were saying, the healthcare system is delivered in this country. Because part of being a civilized country is having a good medical system, and that has been a problematic area. If I understand correctly, there's two key pieces of legislation that you and your team have prepared that are about to be discussed. If you could just outline what are the key points. I think you started mentioning that one is the change in the financing, but what is it that you're trying to accomplish with these reforms for non-experts?
The two bills that are in front of Parliament at this time, one of them is creating financial guarantees for payment of medical services and for payment of pharmaceuticals or medicines.
So who's going to be paying?
We are creating a national health insurance. It's similar to the NHS system that is in the UK, where there are tax hryvnia that are paid now into the budget will be administered differently. Right now, the taxes are distributed equally across Ukraine to pay for the infrastructure to exist. And the idea is that patients come to this infrastructure and they should be receiving services. However, at this time, there is not enough funding to pay for services. So we pay for the walls of the hospital and the existence of the beds and very low salaries for the medical personnel who are in those hospitals or in those medical facilities. But the patients don't receive any services. They have to pay for everything themselves. They pay the doctors, they buy their own medicines, they buy all of the disposable materials, and they pay for everything.
And so, this is something that theoretically should be provided by the state budget, but in reality, patients are asked to pay for these. Am I correct?
Yes, it's a very inefficient system because, again, you're paying for the existence of the hospital itself without looking at how many procedures they do, how many doctors do you really need, are they fulfilling the needs of the population or not. It's all based on the existence of a system rather than the services provided. Since the beginning of the century and very, very discreetly after World War II, many countries in Europe, as well as in other parts of the world, changed from paying for generally the existence of hospitals to paying for hospital services. An insurance system, whether it's a national insurance system or a private insurance system, where payment goes as a fee for service for the services provided. And in Ukraine, we haven't had that system at all for the last 25 years. So what we've done is we've put forth a change in the way we're distributing the budgetary funds that are already in place. We're not asking for additional funds. We're saying the funds that we have can be effectively distributed by paying for services and that we can provide better services, higher quality services, and more of them for our patients if we're not just supporting an infrastructure.
So it's a conceptual shift.
Right,
and
we call
redistribution.
That the financing follows the patient. So where the patient chooses to go, that's where the money goes. If I choose to go to my primary care doctor in my neighborhood, that's where the payment will go for the services. If I choose to go to the primary care doctor across town in a different region because that's where I heard the doctors are better, I make that choice and the money will follow me. It won't be distributed by the location where you have your registration or propiska, but where you choose to go. On a primary care level, that'll be a capitation or fee per patient given to each of the doctors that are chosen by the patients. When it comes to the higher level of care, specialized care hospitalization, it'll be by DRGs or diagnostic related groups, and these are more fee-for-service payments through a national health insurer. Now, we're rolling this out over 2.5 years. We begin with primary health care on January 1st, 2018, and then January 1st, 2019, we start on specialized care and on hospitalization so that by 2020, the entire system is financed differently. We already have promises from the Ministry of Finance that every year they will help us to increase the amount of funding, financing available, because the kind of change that we're producing with the financing of the healthcare system where we're able to prove where the money's going, and also that there actually are results. It's a results-oriented manner of distributing the financing. They're more willing to provide us more funds because right now we have a very large amount of money, over 62 billion hryvnia, that are spent on medicine, just on the medicina subvencija, or the financing of the hospitals and of the medical facilities, and we can't really say that that money is being used effectively because we don't see positive effects. At this time, Ukrainians live 10 to 11 years shorter than our European neighbors. Several things that, you know, we have a problem with an epidemic of HIV and antibiotic-resistant tuberculosis. We have a very high incidence of hepatitis C. We have a very high incidence. 67% of Ukrainians die from cardiovascular disease every year. The kinds of diseases that are preventable, if we had a strong primary care service, if we could do preventative medicine, if we can have early detection of disease and do the intervention early so that it doesn't get to the point where you need to, where you have a heart attack or you have a stroke.
Is this already in place?
This is already in place.
That's
and
amazing.
In the first month of April 2017, there was a 62% increase in the use of these medicines over the same month, April of 2016, a year ago. And also because we spoke to the manufacturers and the distributors and we had them lower their prices to get into a range of reference pricing that we did with our neighboring countries, we've actually actually lowered the prices on these medicines by 23%. Just this one program has been extremely successful. And now we'd like to do more of these programs so that we can pay for the medical care for patients. 640,000 families go bankrupt every year in Ukraine because of the payment for medical treatment for their own family members or their loved ones. They have to sell their cars, they have to sell their houses, they have to borrow money from people because there really isn't any guarantee from the government. So what we're providing is a financial guarantee that we'll be able to pay for these services 100%. There are some services where there'll be a copay, but it will be a everyone will know what that copay is. It's a single tariff across the whole country for each of the services. The amount paid will be known. It'll be all transparent. It'll be the information will be given to the patients, and they'll know how much they have to copay if there is a copay. And there will be programs in place for those who can't financially subsidies. Afford that copay. There'll be subsidies, as there are for energy now in Ukraine. They're also very specifically even put into the law that the soldiers who've become disabled, permanently disabled because of injuries that they received in the Russian-Ukrainian war in eastern Ukraine, that they will have free medical care 100% for the rest of their lives. And there'll be additional programs that'll be provided for by local authorities, as well as by businesses such as Ukrzaliznitsa, the National Railroad Company. We're now in a discussion with them about their providing additional insurance for all of their employees to pay whatever copay there needs to be. So there's a lot of different areas that we can work with to help patients who can't afford to pay the copay so that they can. But very many Ukrainians right now can afford to pay that copay, and we need to stop lying to ourselves here in Ukraine. The medicine and the healthcare is not free. It isn't. Everybody pays for almost everything. 640,000 families go bankrupt because of this. We need to provide financial guarantees by the government to use the money that is already paid into the tax system, not only through the regular taxation of income tax, but also through PDV and sales taxes. It's already there in our budget. Let's use it more efficiently. Once we start using it more efficiently, we can talk about having additional private health insurance, perhaps other types of programs through the national insurance, and we'll be able to provide more services for our patients. There are also several programs that continue that we're not cutting out. We do national procurement of medicines. We buy very expensive medicines on a national level. So for patients who have cancer, for patients who have hepatitis B and C, for patients who need treatment for tuberculosis, for orphan illnesses or very rare illnesses that children have, we actually buy these medicines on a national level. And this year, in 2017, 5.9 billion hryvnia are going to buy these medicines. That was also one of the very successful programs that happened with reforms and as an anti-corruption program was we in 2015 Parliament voted for a law where we gave the national procurement to international organizations rather than doing it within the ministry. Within
so basically the ministry,
changing the way it's procured, because through the ministry there were a lot of problems with tenders, there was a lot of corruption that was involved, and so now the ministry just forms the order which medicines we need, and we give it to international organizations like UNICEF, UNDP, and Crown agents to actually do the purchasing. It has caused us to, last year in 2015, we were able to buy 5% more medicines than we had bought in 2014 with the same amount of money. And this year, the savings are even greater. We already have over $17 million in savings for just the vaccine program. That allows us to buy additional vaccines and additional medicines for our patients.
This all sounds wonderful. You touched on the issue of corruption when you were speaking about the procurement. From what I've been reading, there's been some opposition to these reforms that you are introducing, plan to introduce, have successfully introduced. Listening to you talk, this sounds amazing, that there are savings, there are more people getting access to services they need more efficiently. Why is there opposition to what you're doing? Where is it coming from?
Especially when it comes to procurement of medicines and procurement of medical devices, there has been a very, very strong lobby against the changes that we're putting forth, because a lot of people are making money on corrupt practices in these particular fields. In medicines, a lot of the what is called the pharma mafia here in Ukraine, there are several pharmaceutical companies and conglomerates that have pretty much been monopolized the system for many years, and they made billions and billions of hryvnia off of the illnesses of Ukrainians. Surprisingly, medicines, pharmaceuticals here in Ukraine are more expensive than in our neighbors like Poland, Estonia, Latvia, and Slovakia, and so on. Even though our economy is much worse off and our hryvnia is much lower in value compared to their currencies or the euro. However, medicines are less expensive there because there is some regulation of prices. In Ukraine, until now, the pharmaceutical industry has been basically the Wild West. They could put any prices they want and they would be agreed upon. Now we're creating competition. Just in the first year of the change in the purchasing and the procurement of medicines through international organizations, 40% more Ukrainian companies and manufacturers were able to get involved in the tender process, because until then they'd always been pushed
squeezed
aside
out by the
and
big
they were
ones.
Squeezed out by the big conglomerates. So now there's a much better chance for those honest Ukrainian pharmaceutical companies and distributors and importers to get in on what's happening and purchasing and producing Ukrainian needs for pharmaceuticals. The other thing that's a big problem is about 7% of Ukraine's GDP is spent on healthcare. Only about 2.6% of that is through government funding. The rest is gray economy.
Ah.
It is all paid under the table, not taxed, not controlled. Pricing is absolutely not regulated. And more than 50% of what's spent on healthcare is paid in cash, under the table, with no control and no regulation, and we have a very difficult time even knowing exactly how much it is. It could be up to 10%. We're not really sure. That's an estimate that the World Health Organization gives us with the 7%. And with that, what we want to do with the new reforms, with the laws and the change in the legislature, we are trying to bring this out into the open.
Accountability.
So that 7% that's spent is something that we can measure, something that we can regulate, and we can also get it more results-oriented so that we know that it's being spent for the benefit of our citizens of Ukraine and for our patients, and that it isn't being spent just to help somebody make money. I'll give you some interesting...
One example, because we're about to run out of time.
Sure. One example of this is Ukrainian doctors have traditionally written out prescriptions for a lot of different medications, most of which don't even have any medicinal effect. They're not real pharmaceuticals. They're vitamins or they're some kind of supplements. And it's about 70% of the medicines that are written out by prescription in Ukraine really don't have any pharmaceutical effect. But because the pharmaceutical companies come and they sell this to the doctors and tell them that it works, the doctors are writing it out. And sometimes they're even getting a cut from the sale of these pharmaceuticals. So we need to re-educate our physicians so that they're only giving those medicines that are really necessary for patients. We need to re-educate patients so that they're not taking medicines that are what we would call over-the-counter, but being sold as prescription medicines that they need to take rather than something just to treat their symptoms. And one of the ways we're doing that is by another reform. We've created a new formulary of what medicines can be bought by government agencies. And that formulary of medicines has decreased from 1,200 registered pharmaceuticals in Ukraine to only about 360.
Dr. Suprun and her colleagues are going to England. She's just telling me about this. So you're going to England to do what?
The Cabinet of Ministers, the Prime Minister and the Cabinet of Ministers was invited by Boris Johnson, the Foreign Minister of the UK, to come to Great Britain, to come to the UK, to London, and to talk about the transformation that's happening in Ukraine, and basically to invite the world to come to Ukraine and see how we've changed. We didn't start healthcare reform 10 months ago when I came into the ministry. Healthcare reform started many years ago with a discussion on how Ukraine needs to transform its healthcare system. But in 2014, a special advisory group was formed at the Ministry of Health. It was there were invited experts from all over the world, including the World Health Organization. There were members of USAID. There were members of Renaissance Foundation, of Canadian government, Ukrainian experts. and also international experts that got together and they wrote a road plan, a strategy of how Ukraine needs to change its healthcare system to improve it. And then we went wider. We actually have traveled to all 24 oblasti, and we have presented these reforms together with the organization Center UA. So this policy, this entire procedure that we've gone through has created a difference in the way society looks at how these reforms are happening.
So you're a success story. Why is it not possible for other ministries to be successful? Your ministry is showing that reform is possible. If I could push you on that question a little bit, it is possible.
I think that there's a traditional block in many government structures here in Ukraine that they don't include society. They're not open to having discussions and having a national dialogue about the issues at hand. All of it is done behind closed doors, and much of it is done as in a paternalistic way where we know better and we're telling society what to do. What we've done from the very first day that we came into the ministry, we open the doors to civil society and we include them in what we're doing. And I think that that really brings that connection between what the people want and what the people need and what experts tell us, and we put it all together into one big into a reform that will not only be the right thing to do theoretically, but practically will work from the very top down to the level of the patient.
So that's a formula that maybe could be suggested to each and every ministry. Thank you very much. This is great. I'm going to start with that.
Thank you.
A new exhibit opened at the Mestetsky Arsenal in Kyiv this week. It's called Artwork and contains the works of 55 Ukrainian and Polish contemporary artists. It will be on through the end of July. Then the exhibit moves to Poland, where it will open in the Wrocław City Gallery on August the 30th. There's a band in Kyiv called New Band. Here's a new song of theirs called Ty i Ja, which means you and me. Enjoy.
Сотню твоїх зелених очей, я через край життя можу згадати будь-яку з таких різноманітних ночей, що були разом, пірнали почуття, ковтали повітря жадібно, торкали тендітно й лагідно, у серці розпалили полум'я. Сміялись, плакали, збентежені і налякані, кохали до нестями ти і я. О, ти і я. Я відчуваю на собі кожного дотику зміст, обертом голова. Можу згадати будь-яке з тих дивовижних місць, де обіймав тебе шепочучі слова. Ковтали повітря жадібно, торкали тендітно й лагідно, у серці розпалили полум'я. Дуріли, сміялись, плакали, збентежені і налякані, кохали до нестями ти і я.
This Sunday, marks the one-year anniversary of our show Ukraine Calling. The first episode aired on July the 9th, 2016. Next week, we'll bring you the highlights from our first year on air, as well as the latest headlines and a new feature interview. Tune in for a new episode, and we'd love to hear from you. Write to us at ukrainecalling@hromadskeradio.org. That's Ukraine Calling, all one word, at hromadskeradio.org. I'm Marta Dichok for Hromadske Radio in Kyiv. Thanks for listening.